From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live.
Be on the lookout and alert for anything out of the ordinary.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk.
Thank you for your cooperation.
TNT Radio.
A little bit of a had to wait to try and drop in there tight, waiting for the TNT bit and got a drum fill instead. I was like, yeah, but you have to be sharp. Luckily, I was a musician back in the day, sort of, if you class playing really loud thrash metal guitar, being a musician, then that's what I was. And in fact, let me tell you this, I put a lot of practice in. I was pretty good on the guitar, I must admit. Practiced about 4 hours a day, every day, for about 10 years. Maybe someday I'll play you a tune live on air. I know Joseph Arthur, the TNT host, he has a show at the weekend. One of the best things of all of TNT was his intros to his Technicolor Dreamcast show. He always used to sing a tune for his guests and make up some lyrics, but he is a kind of professional musician and he can actually sing. But I might try it, you know. If you have any requests, leave a message in the live chat which song you would like me to perform, and I'll think about it. If I'm feeling really vicious and nasty someday, I will sing for you, and that'll ruin your day, absolutely. Darren has just written Enter the Sandman. I can tell you're not a real metaler because there's no the. It's just Enter Sandman, Darren. Come on, son. Enter the Sandman. But anyway, good for you for trying that one anyway. I like it. I like your input. Woo! Okay. What have we got coming up this hour? Well, I'm going to be talking to Darren in a minute. And also, Mr. Paul Kudinek from Winter Oak Press. He's going to be joining me in about 10 or 15 minutes. And we're just going to chew the fat in general. I actually have no idea what I'm going to talk to him about. That's the way I like it. Spontaneous, nothing really scripted or prepared, so stay tuned for that one. Yesterday, Berkshire Hathaway shareholder conference in America, old Warren Buffett, the so-called wisest investment sage on the planet, shareholder with Berkshire Hathaway, had a conference, and his old mate Charlie Munger was there. Between them, they've a combined age of, no joke, pushing up on 200. Old toss pots, the pair of them. And, you know, they're like the Soroses of this world and the Schwabs of this world. They're all old and they're, you know what? They're all going to die soon. That's it. They can't stop that aging process and all the billions and all the trillions and all the shenanigans is going to come to an end. Because we all end up 6 feet under, and I don't care how much dough you've got. As my old granny used to say, there's no pockets in a shroud, son. You can't take it with you. Look at all those old Egyptian pharaohs building those big pyramids, buried in those sarcophaguses with all their gold and their silver. And guess what? They're still dead. They're just dust and bones and maggots eating their flesh. And that's going to happen to Charlie Munger and old Warren Buffett. So it doesn't matter what they bury him in, or even if they, what is it, cremate him, he's still going to end up as ash on somebody's mantelpiece. So there you go. But anyway, they had a shareholder conference where they were banging on about how well they've been doing and money and this, that, and the other. Somebody stood up and said at the top of his voice, "We all know how much Bill Gates loves children. He met and traveled with Jeffrey Epstein many, many times." This was live at the Berkshire Hathaway conference. And he had started moving down that route and someone was heckling him to be quiet. And he actually turned to Warren Buffett. He says, "You're the chairman. Can I keep talking?" And he says, "Yes, you can. You've got 3 minutes." So he actually was given permission to speak by the chief executive. And then he went on to talk about Bill Gates and his links to the child trafficker, pedophile extraordinaire, Jeffrey Epstein. At that point, the crowd booed. The security jumped in. And as this man was frog marched from the premises, all those filthy, disgusting creatures applauded loudly as the man who stood up and told the truth was escorted from the building. Listen, their time is a coming. Their time is a coming. I was listening to a Johnny Cash song this morning. It's on my playlist. It's called God's Gonna Cut You Down. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter where you're hiding. Doesn't matter if you've got a bunker. He's going to get you. He's going to get you good. And then he's going to serve judgment for all eternity in hell. Yes. So anyway, that's something to look forward to going down the line. But I digress a little bit of music, talking about music. I recommend Johnny Cash. And I recommend his later works with Rick Rubin, the so-called American Recordings. But if you want to get a wry smile on your face, go and listen to that song, God's Gonna Cut You Down by Johnny Cash. It's brilliant. Brilliant. But anyway, this is TNT Radio. What am I going to tell you? Yes, we're wonderful. We're amazing. We're the best. The best of the best. And you should be telling people about us. You should be promoting us. You should have TNT Radio painted across the front of your house. You should get a TNT Radio tattoo either on your right hand or your forehead. No, that's the mark of the beast. Sorry about that. But yeah, you could do it with a TNT Radio tattoo. And of course, you can check out our website, tntradio.live, and download our app from the Google Play Store or the App Store and stay connected with us perpetually for all eternity here on TNT Radio.
Breaking news heard here.
It's around the clock update.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Darren. Every time I see a story about refugee and immigration chaos, I immediately think of you now. You're now inextricably I see it and I go, I have to send Darren that. He's seen it. All right. But anyway, immigration, end of Title 42 in USA, migrant warfare. Biden admits the border will be chaotic for a while after Title 42 laps. Before you give us the download on that, I saw a clip of El Paso in Texas. I kid you not, my friend. My friend. I'm talking, I don't know how many, multiple tens of thousands piling in, just sleeping 3 to 4 deep on the pavements and the roads in El Paso in Texas after one day. After one day, and Biden says it's going to be a little chaotic for a while. How would you feel as an El Paso resident at the moment?
I'd be absolutely furious, and I would be over the moon when they move on, and they're in the problem. You know, El Paso, they've got no resources or infrastructure. They've got no facilities to manage the sheer influx of immigrants, illegal immigrants, that are coming across the southern border. They're piling up right along the southern border. And tomorrow, the emergency health order, Title 42, which was put in place as part of the COVID pandemic, which allowed illegals to be returned, or aliens, they call them illegal aliens in America, to be returned back to where they come from. That ends tomorrow. So does the COVID pandemic emergency in the USA. That also ends tomorrow. And what are they going to do? They're expecting, I've seen numbers of 13,000 a day to cross the border. I expect it's going to be a lot higher than that. There are hundreds of thousands all waiting to just come across, believing that they will be able to get safe passage, free passage, or they're gonna get across the border and the Americans have got nowhere to put them. They're maxed out. Their NGOs have got nowhere to put them. So what's the plan? The plan is to stick them on buses and then do mass drop-offs, safe drop-offs, they're calling it, dispersing these illegal migrants at bus stops, supermarkets, train stations, gas stations, probably little kids' schools. Who knows what Biden's got up his sleeves for these illegal immigrants, but they are about to be dumped on the US en masse. And, you know, you can do the maths. 10,000 a day, 365 days a year. That's millions of flooding across the border in America. And, I would be extremely concerned if I was living in the USA right now, what the future holds. Because once that tidal wave starts, you know, it will take more than a Donald Trump. It's too late.
And that's it. It's like an arrow. When you shoot a bullet or you shoot an arrow, it once it's been released, it's gone. You can't recall it. It has to hit something and do something or end up in a final destination. And here's the thing, Biden, acknowledged, okay, yesterday, he acknowledged there will be chaos at the southern border for a period of time, but there's already been chaos at the southern border for a very, very long time. The man is doing something that, in his own words, will create even more chaos. And then, as he says, then his administration will gradually get the situation under control. As the so-called commander-in-chief, whose best interest should be looking after the people of America, how on earth can anybody justify this action when, in his own words, it will create chaos that will take a while to bring under control? You talk about the mathematics, 13,000 estimate multiplied by 365 days a year, all the buses taken to sanctuary cities, going to Chicago, going to New York. Have you seen Chicago and New York recently? Have you seen the way the place has just been trashed recently? There's nowhere to put them. There's no infrastructure. This theory of ours that we've punted for over a year, controlled demolition of our societies.
This is part of it.
What more evidence do you have to present? What more evidence do you need to present that this is what it is?
And what did Joe Biden say? I think I might have even shared this video this morning on social media. Whites will be an absolute minority. Absolute minority. I mean, he says it twice. That sounds like an endeavor, an objective, a goal. And as part of the Great Reset, the controlled collapse of our economies, this immigration narrative. It's not a narrative. It is happening. Thousands. It's not just the USA. We've got it in the UK. What's their solution? Oh, we'll get a barge. We'll get a barge. We'll refit it. We can hold 500
people. One barge. Yeah. Which wouldn't even take in. Even on a bad day, it would take in one day's worth. And then you've got to transport the barge. That barge came from Italy. Don't know if you know that or not. They had to ferry it from Italy, paying the fuel to do that. Then they have mooring fees. Then they have service fees, staffing fees, etc. What to put five? Why not just stop the people coming in the first place? And I've always had, when I've been asked the question, what are they doing, Rick? What are they doing? I can't say for a certainty that they're forming an army, although it looks like it. But what I can say for a certainty is it's to cause societal tension, disruption, overload on the infrastructure, and cause hell to the surrounding areas. Mm-hmm. Of that, I've always believed, and that for sure, Darren, is what we're seeing now, not just in El Paso, but you're seeing it in England. Ireland is, my friend, some of the pictures now, there's shanty towns springing up outside immigration offices in Ireland.
It breaks my heart.
Tent city, man. Tent city. And I'm not hating on the people in the tents. They've been sold a pup. They've been sold a pup by the government as well. They've been trafficked over here. They've been lured over here. And now they're facing the reality of life on the Irish streets. And it's not a nice life for anybody to live. No. I don't wish it on anybody. And everybody's been shafted by their governments.
Yeah. I mean, in America, and I wasn't joking when I said they plan to use bus stops and supermarkets and gas stations to drop off whole busloads of immigrants. That is actually their plan when they're maxed out. Where are these people going to go? What are they going to do? You've seen the images of El Paso where they're three or four deep on the pavement. This is not a way for these people to live. And there's another element that is not really being reported, is there's high levels of tuberculosis, HIV, scabies, lice, and so all these other different ailments and diseases that are these people in America, same as in the UK, same as in Ireland, same as in Europe, Aussie land down under. Murray's shaking his head here, but he's all right down there, that little island. They're quite safe and isolated. But, you know, we're flooding our country, not just with immigrants, but diseases and all sorts. And the consequences of, you know, crime is going to be rife, especially in the southern borders, southern states of America, where these people are being dropped off from. It's going to be a catastrophe.
Catastrophic.
You know?
Yeah, it's going to be catastrophic. And then again, you put yourself into their shoes, the land of milk and honey, you pile across the border, you think the home of the free, the land of the brave or whatever, I'm going to get self-sorted, I'm going to make money. And then you end up living on the streets with 10,000 other people. You're hungry, you're disease-ridden, you're dirty, you've got nowhere to lay your head. What are you going to do do, you're going to get angry, and then you're going to start looting, or you're going to start turning to crime, because you need to feed yourself and you need to do something or to relieve pressure. I'm not justifying and condoning crime here or even validating the actions of these people, but put yourself in their shoes, walk a mile in their shoes. You would probably be acting and doing the same thing yourself. I know I would, and that's just the reality of the situation. Controlled demolition of our society, Darren, that's all there is to it, my friend. And undoubtedly, it's only what, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, towards the end of the week. I'm going back. I'm going backwards here. Rickner's days of the week. I'm going back. It's today's Wednesday, tomorrow's Tuesday, and then the end of the week is, undoubtedly, we'll touch on this again before the end of the week.
Next week.
We'll
see what happens when the Title 42 ends, and we're going to have videos all over social media of just rows and streams of people flooding across the border, and the Americans who've got, they've sent 1,500 extra soldiers there, they're going to be outnumbered. They can't do nothing apart from that.
They're going to be outnumbered 10 to 1 on day one. On day two, it's 20 to 1, 30 to 1. By the end of the first week, they're going to be outnumbered about 70 to 1. That's all there is to it. It's a sticky plaster on an open wound. But anyway, we've got to pause for now, Darren. So thank you very much, as always. I'm Rick Munn. Yeah, this is TNT Radio. Stay tuned for Paul Kudnick, and I will be in discussion when we come back here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlman.
Why is it that we don't understand Chinese culture? I would say to a large degree, we do not get a picture. And also some of the most important misunderstandings, misconception, or even disinformation that we hear about China.
The West doesn't understand that China is a sovereign civilizational state having a natural influence in her region. Sovereign means independent and having her own agency as expressed by her ruling class, her intelligentsia, and her people. Civilizational means that China has her own hierarchy of values, which sometimes coincide with the hierarchy of values of the West, but sometimes doesn't coincide with the hierarchy of values from the West. And that hierarchy of values is coming, of course, from her own history and culture. China has 36 centuries of history, and by a larger definition, China has 50 centuries of continuous cultural matrix.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
A cashless society means zero cash. No tipping the waiter or hairdresser. No giving to busking musicians. No selling unwanted items for cash. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm really happy to be joined again after what seems to be an eternity by none other than Mr. Paul Kudnick, who writes a lot, I must say, and he's a very tasty writer on it too. I wish I could write like him, but I can't. I'm a mouthpiece. I talk. He's a good writer, but he can also talk a little bit too. You can check him out on Twitter at Winter Oak Press, WINTEROAK, Winter Oak Press. And also, you can find his output as well as the output of many other talented individuals on winteroak.org.uk. Paul, first of all, it's been too long, and I'm glad to see you again. How are you doing today?
Hello, Rick. Yeah, I'm doing fine, thank you.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. And no shortage of stuff to talk about today. Time is the enemy, my friend. We got about another 37 minutes on air here today. So I want to try and get your views, thoughts, and opinions on a lot of things that's going on at the minute. I mentioned you as a writer. You're a very good and prolific writer. You've wrote some great pieces, one of which I'll never forget that I read that really opened my eyes about a lot of things we were talking about that was based around, you know, the events in the world from the First World War onwards. That's a piece you put out last year that first made me start to write, read your output. At the minute, you've no shortage of material, right? And you've only got a finite amount of time, a finite amount of hours in the day. What's your priorities at the minute, or what's really driving you at the minute or inspiring you, maybe not in a good way, to put pen to paper? What's driving you at the minute as a sort of primary driver to write, or what's your main focus at this point in time?
The main focus of what I'm looking at now is the general overview of where we're heading as a society, you know, which is takes in the whole smart city agenda. Though obviously, as you know, it's much broader than that. This whole it's this whole technocratic coup that they're trying to impose on us and to shift us into this new type of society, which is closer to what we think of as fascism or Stalinism than anything that we've known for the last 50 years or more, or we've ever known in most parts of Europe. It's such a big question that I think, yeah, I'm trying to take a step back from it and understand the overall implications and how we might go about forming some sort of opposition to that, how we might stop it happening. That seems to me the big question that I don't have the answer to yet, but I'd dearly love to know the answer to.
I think there's a lot more people are thinking the same way as you do at the minute. I'm trying to step back and look at things from a distance now. You know, when you're writing about stuff, you get immersed in it. You become very focused on one particular topic. You get into it per se. But I think it's good to step back and look at things from a distance, as you call it there. You're trying to get a general overview of where we're at the moment and where we're headed at the minute, and then looking at possible solutions to that. And I think that's the key going forward. I think there's been enough talking done. There's been enough writing done. There's been enough broadcasting done. We have to come up with actual plans now, or else all we'll be doing is simply documenting the demise of our society. I think the time is now that we do need to start moving towards more activity rather than speaking, writing, or doing what we're doing now. I think it has to translate into action, because if it doesn't, I think we're finished.
Yeah. There's a real urgency about this historical moment, isn't there?
Uh-huh. You see, the thing about Darren and I were talking just before you came on there, and one of the things we cover a lot is the whole business about, you know, illegal immigration. And there's a lot of theories flying around as to what's happening. Why is it predominantly young men? Is it going to be an army? Are they going to keep us in our 15-minute cities? What I do know is, and this topic in particular, is what has actually happened. There's a massive strain placed on infrastructure. There's nowhere to actually put the men that are coming into the country. It's causing a lot of friction, a lot of tension. There's a lot of NGOs springing up along the back of this that are endorsing open borders for all. This is causing a lot of friction, especially in Ireland at the minute. The country's really, really, they're trying to split it along the lines of, you know, virtue signaling Ireland for all, and a sensible contingent of people who are saying, listen, we don't have the place, we don't have anywhere to put these people that are coming in. We don't know who they are most of the time. A lot of them are coming in without any background checks. There's no financial contribution into society. It's not cultural enrichment and diversity, it's destruction. Is it fair to say that at this point, looking at Ireland, looking at France, looking at what's going on in El Paso and US with Article 42 being abolished, is it fair to say that at this point, we can safely say that this is an attempt at societal destruction by our governments?
Destruction of what we've had before, I would say. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. Every time that populations are moved around in large numbers, it obviously undermines the cohesion of what was there before. I mean, look at North America when the settlers arrived there from Europe, or in Australia, what was there before was swept away. sometimes they're called settlers, sometimes they're called slaves. Because I mean, again, the cultures of Africa were wrecked by the slave trade, by both under previous to Western imperialism as well. And so it's not just a simple. I mean, I think it's a mistake to think of it in terms as just from a European point of view, as to see that people are arriving here that are spoiling our way of life. I think it's the whole system is built on destroying cohesive societies so that everybody becomes dependent, becomes slaves to their system, to a hierarchical, vertical system, rather than having that horizontal togetherness, which has enabled us for hundreds of thousands of years to live perfectly well amongst ourselves, according to our own rules and our own desires, our own aspirations, rather than being corralled into these concentration camps of smart cities, our example. It's basically digital concentration camps. It's a combination of a process that I can see happening for a long time.
That seems to be the modus operandi at the moment, this whole business of control and technocratic, as you call it, a technocratic coup that's going on at the moment. We've got to take a quick news break now just for a minute. But when I come back, I want to look at whether or not this is at any point in time, have the globalist type people or the people that have these fantasies of world domination and control, is this the closest that they've been to realizing that dream? And they haven't done it yet, obviously, and there's still time to resist and kick back. But at this point, is this the closest and is this the best opportunity they're going to have to actually control the world because of our reliance on technology, because of our complacency in general as people? They've done a work on us for the last 3 years right across the globe. Is this their best shot at accomplishing what they want to accomplish at this point in history? So think about that for a minute, and when we come back, I want to get your response to that one. Is this the best shot they've had, and are they going to follow through with it? Do you think they're going to get what they want? Don't go away. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
I've got news for you, baby. I've got news for you, baby.
News.
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. Pakistan's former Prime Minister has been arrested in dramatic scenes in the country's capital. Washington's announced it's splashing another $1.2 billion on Ukraine. Beijing's blasted Washington's Chinese ambassador over the US's continued support for Taiwan. And a Manhattan jury has rejected a woman's claims that she was raped by former US President Donald Trump 27 years ago.
For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio,
simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, keeping you in the loop on TNT Radio.
All right, so you rightly touched on some historical points there, Paul, to do with, people wanting to take over territories, conquer territories, enslave people. None of this is anything new. It's been happening all the way through history for as long as there's been people on the earth. Somebody's wanted to control and dominate another group of people. However, at this point, at this particular point that we're at now in 2023, with the advent on the development of technology, the reliance on technology, for example, we're relying on it right now to be able to communicate on air. We're relying on it to broadcast. People are relying on it to interact with us in the live chat, etc. I've relied on it to do some research on you, to find out more about what you've been writing about at the minute. And that's just for the purposes of this broadcast, let alone online banking if you use it, and people that have got into the digital trap. Is this a golden time, or is this a golden opportunity for the globalist class, the globalist predator class, to capitalize on this world domination fantasy and try their utmost to follow through? Is this potentially their time, potentially?
Yeah, certainly what they want. Yeah, I mean, Klaus Schwab talked about the narrow window of opportunity that was served up by COVID, and that was the starting, pistol for this coup that they think they can push through, and I'm not sure that the COVID thing completely worked for them as they would have wanted it to, but they've got plenty of other crises up their sleeves, and I don't think they're going to back off. I think they know that it's now or never for them.
Yeah.
As people wake up, yeah, as people are waking up, like they can see that people are waking up, hence this sort of panic of smears and censorship and, and new laws like this thing in Ireland, which is quite frightening, isn't it? There's just... So the battle is engaged, isn't it? The battle is engaged.
And as you rightly quoted, Schwab's thinking on this is, you know, we've got a chance here, talking to the globalists, that is, we've got a chance here, guys, to do what we want to do. We're going to use the COVID crisis as the starting point or the starting pistol. And then, of course, they've got a lot of climate nonsense that they've still got up their sleeves. They're bringing in extreme censorship, the mandating of injections, you know, the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty that they're trying to pump through. They seem to be spinning a lot of plates. Of course, conflict in Ukraine involving NATO, and then they're talking about China, Taiwan. It goes on and on and on. So I don't think they accomplished what they wanted to with the whole scandemic over the last 3 years, but I believe also that was just the beginning of this assault on us that's currently taking place as per right now. The climate thing, do you think people are already dismissive of that, even the lay people? I know there's people sucked in by it, but do you think that people are wise to the last 3 years of lies from the media, lies from scientific professionals or experts, and they're taking what they're being told now with a pinch of salt? Do you think they'll pour scorn in this whole business? Do you think it'll get off the starting blocks, the climate change push? I know they're trying it at the minute, but do you think it'll bed in like the COVID hysteria?
I don't know. No, I was quite surprised to see how many people are questioning it now, actually. The other day, I sent a tweet out, which was just advertising the existence of a page that we set up on Winter Oak 4 years ago called Climate Capitalists that was exposing all that. It's just a lot of links, basically, to work of researchers like Corey Morningstar, who did a lot of it, who's exposed all these NGOs and the rest of it. And so I just merrily sent out yet another tweet saying, you know, information here. And, you know, I'm using the wording on the original page, which I suppose, you know, I can now see was presenting it as something new. But a lot of people came back and said, "Well, we know this. You know, it's nothing new. This, we know it's all a scam." So, you know, things have moved on, haven't they? Yeah, I think things have evolved over the last few years. People are naturally a lot more likely to disbelieve in the word of the mass media and their politicians. And yeah, I'm not sure they're going to. I think there are huge cracks appearing in their climate narrative as well.
Yeah.
Which has got to be good news.
Well, in a way, does that not link into what we were referencing there, for example, with censorship being increased, although there's talk about it, you know, using the Twitter as an example of Musk's returning freedom of speech? I'm not buying into that at all. I can see this platform or that platform being positioned. In his own words, he said it's an accelerant to developing the X app, which will be modeled on the Chinese WeChat all-inclusive app. That's his goal and his vision for that platform. Now he's bringing in the like of Tucker Carlson, the biggest alt media, or not alt media, but the closest thing to anti-established mainstream media. He's got hundreds of millions of followers. People are going to get paid now, content creators, if they're operating off of Twitter, so on and so forth. I think a corralling is happening there as well, that as Musk refers to Twitter as being like the hive mind, he keeps referring it to a hive mind. I'm not sure that I want to be classified as just part of a hive mind. I do use the platform. I do realize it has its benefits. And I know that we've been able to connect each other, for example, you and I, and through TNT, through Twitter. But are people placing too much emphasis on this as maybe being the knight in shining armor on the white horse, Twitter? Are they in for a shock of the day down the line on that one, do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think so. I mean, Elon Musk is very much part of the global push for world dominance, for global governance, isn't he? So, you know, what he says often sounds right, doesn't it? He sounds like he's a freedom-loving chap. But, all of it, we're just living in a world where everything is... seems to be false. People say one thing and they mean exactly the opposite. And I remain very, very wary and suspicious of people with that much power and money and connections.
Isn't it disturbing, though, the amount of people that place weight in just words? Okay, so I know where you stand on a lot of things. You've probably gathered where I stand on a lot of things. And I'm going to say something now, right now, that I don't mean, but I'm going to say it. So I'm going to say, I believe in COVID-19. I think children should be injected. And I think there is a real global warming crisis that if we don't act soon, we're all going to die. Now, I've just said it. I don't mean any of it. I don't mean any of it, but I've said it and it came out of my mouth so easily. The lies came out of my mouth so easily. So why on earth would anybody pay any attention to simply my words? They need to check it out in connection with my actions. And these days, Paul, what I'm seeing is a lot of people, it's like throwing a dog a bone. You just have to throw them a statement that you know will tickle their ears. And all of a sudden, you've got a legion of people that are saying, oh, he's on our side because he condemns this. He's on our side because he condemns that. No, you've got to look at the actions of the man, not just the words. And I think that's a trap a lot of people are falling into with a lot of these savior figures that are coming on the horizon. And they only go by what they're hearing, and the people are saying what they want them to hear to con them. That's what I'm seeing in all of this.
Yeah, well, I know it's just too easy, isn't it? As you just demonstrated.
Yeah, and I don't mean any of it. Somebody will probably sample that and say, I told you, Rick was controlled opposition, yeah. Really believes in all this. No, I'm using it to make a point. I don't put too much weight in technology. Don't put too much weight in saviors, especially people that you don't actually know. And you're not seeing this as well. You're seeing people that almost think they have a relationship or they intimately know people that they have no idea what they're actually all about. Like, I don't actually know you. I don't really know much about your background. I think you're a good writer. I'm happy to talk to you now, but do I really know Paul Kudnick? Do you really know Rick Munn? The answer is no. If we want to develop trust, we have to do that over time. You know, I have to act and back up my talk with my actions. Too many people are trusting blindly at the moment in people that they have no idea what they're really all about. And that's a big pitfall going forward too, especially with that strategy that you want to come up with about solutions. We need to be serious about who we're working with and at least know the people we're working with to be able to come up with solutions to this, to vet them almost. Would that be a fair strategy?
Yeah, I think it's a strange world when I deal a lot with people who I don't know, you know, because that's the world we live in. And I know people in real life as well. Maybe that's the starting point, really. I think maybe we should be looking at the people who actually live in the same place as we do and who we can meet in person and get a feel for them. Because when you meet somebody, you get a, I'm not saying it's a sort of ESP thing, but you get vibes from somebody's physical presence, just little things about them, and you know, and you, yeah, in order to trust somebody, I'd really have to, as you say, get really know them personally, and that would be a good starting point.
See, that's the dangerous. Yeah, that's the danger as well with the whole dependency on being online, okay? And I'm the same as you. When you meet someone for the first time, you'll get a vibe, okay? Yeah, I could talk to this guy. I could meet this guy again. But even if you're trying to con me, eventually a serpent or a viper will always show their teeth. Eventually, they'll always want to stick their fangs into you. So even if you're pretending to be a good guy and pretending to be on the right side, given enough time, everyone shows their true colors, but that's not always visible when you're dealing with online people. And I think the focus needs to be, if we're talking about solutions, we need to stop depending so much and placing so much weight on online activity and form local groups with people that we do know and trust initially, and maybe broaden those horizons with people that we're building up trust with to depend on if things go pear-shaped and if we need a support network. I have only a very small group. I don't know about you. Maybe you can tell us this, but I have only a very small network of friends in real life. I'm talking about half a dozen, but they're guys that I've known for 20, 30, 40 years. I have been through hell with them and I've been to heaven with them. I do trust them pretty much. They're my inner circle. If you just rocked up and knocked the door and said, "Hi, Rick, I follow you on Twitter. I want to be in your gang." I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that. And then a lot of people get offended when they say, "Oh, but we're on the same side." It's like, no, that's not the way it works. And I find a lot of people are reaching out to other people now and getting offended when they're told, "Actually, I don't want you to come to my house and I don't want to meet you for dinner. I don't even know who you are. I need to find out a little bit more about you." We need to vet people and we need to be sensible with this if we're going to come up with solutions. Or am I being too paranoid?
Oh, I don't think you're being too paranoid, but I mean, even from a positive point of view, I think that the sort of energy we can get with work from working together in real life is much is much more valuable, and that is that's going to defeat the system. Is that real human togetherness and real, you know? It really goes a step beyond anything to do with sharing tweets or, you know, liking posts, the rest of it, doesn't it? It's real. It's real. We need to get back to reality.
That's a fantastic statement. We need to get back to reality because I think we're all in danger of being detached from reality by this online existence that many of us do have, for greater or for worse. We're going to take a quick break, Paul, just for a minute. And when we come back, I want to look at the power of association, physical association with people, because this whole business, we talk a lot about the problems you've mentioned about solutions. We've already touched on them. More real life contacts, more working together with other people. What does that actually do for us? What does that actually bring to the table, and why people should be doing more of that? We'll look at that when we come back after this short break here on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
The de facto Democrat Party motto is by hook or by crook, or, as Malcolm X more menacingly put it, by any means necessary. That's exactly what they're doing to Donald Trump. They want to get him by any means necessary. It started before his first inauguration. The Washington Post was calling for his impeachment before he'd even been sworn in. Thereupon proceeded a number of ridiculous attempts to unseat him. Russia, Russia, Russiagate, impeachment 1.0, impeachment 2.0, the raid on Mar-a-Lago, confidential docs, absurdly unconstitutional criminal charges, and now a defamation lawsuit brought by a woman that Donald Trump said he never met. But damn the facts, we've got to get that drumpf any way we can. Well, I just have one piece of advice for the Democrats. Watch out for the boomerang. It's a killer when it comes back. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
I know it's hard to accept that 2 in 3 deaths on country roads are country people. But look at the faces in the photos in this bar. Just count the people who have died. The friends, the teammates, brothers. Then think, this is the same in every bloody photo, in every club room, in every country town. Can't ignore it. 2 in 3 deaths on country roads are country people.
Think Road Safety. A message from the Government of South Australia.
Ladies and gentlemen,
he's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk.
What you doing?
TNT Radio.
Okay, Paul, we talked about meeting people. We talked about physical association with people going forward as a possible solution. I'm sure you can remember, and they're still ongoing. There was a lot of protests happen when the lockdowns came in, and against mandates and against the jabs when they first came out. And some people questioned whether they were a waste of time or not. They said, oh, everybody's getting together, they're taking to the streets, but it's like a big party and nothing's actually being done. Now, my take on it personally was that anybody attending any kind of gathering where everybody was of the like mind or similar minded, that was a little bit of a boost, if you like, to that individual. So maybe you had a bad week or a bad day, and whether or not your protest actually accomplished anything in the scheme of things, if it kept you going for an extra few days, or it kept you going to the end of that day, or give you a morale boost, then surely it was worthwhile doing. That can only be done when you're in the physical presence of like-minded people. It's good if you can connect personally. Maybe not everybody can, but wherever you can, you should seek that out, because it does actually give you a mental as well as a physical and possibly a spiritual boost as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've always found that. Years ago when I was in England, and I was We're doing a lot of local campaigning, local activism, you know, very unglamorous, just sort of handing out leaflets in the high street and so on. But now and again, there'd be some big event up in London, May Day, and, you know, protests against capitalism and all these stuff that I was doing at the time. And just to see that there are lots of other people who are on the same side as you and think the same things and to feel their energy, feel the potential of coming together. And particularly, you know, the lockdown, especially because we've all felt so isolated. And it was like, you know, we're all treated as being mentally ill for not having swallowed the official line. And suddenly I was going out on the, well, there was protests here in France in the end to do with the, against the vaccine passports and the rest of it. And suddenly to see that there was hundreds, thousands of people out there and who had dared to do that. And I think it did achieve something, actually, the protest, but more than that. Just get it confirms us in what we believe, and it gives us the strength to carry on a local level, or just on a personal level.
I think that's the key too. And does that not make sense now, why they wanted to keep us locked down 23 hours a day? They wanted to stop us gathering socially in pubs and cafes and restaurants, on sports pitches, meeting up with our family and friends in our houses, limiting to 6 people in England. It was the so-called rule of 6 that was brought in. Was that not because they can also see the power of association and the power of a group of like-minded individuals coming together, and the danger that poses to the globalist predator class if people are united? Personally, their morale is high and they realize that they're not actually isolated and alone. All of a sudden that becomes a dangerous crowd for them, hence the need to suppress us and break us all up into little splinter cells.
Yeah, absolutely. And social distancing was this buzzword, wasn't it? I mean, the excuse was that it was, you might catch the virus if you got within a certain distance of somebody else. But to me, it is quite obvious that it's part of their plan for society as a whole, is just to isolate us all as individuals, cut off our natural connections to others, which is what stands in the way of their domination and control, our natural connections, whether in terms of cultural cohesion or just individual connection to other individuals. The moment we form anything from families to communities, tribes, all of that acts as a bulwark against their control, and they want to destroy it. I don't think they can. I don't think they will.
No.
People are not like that. They're not going to fall for it.
Divide and conquer is a proven tactic, but I think as you've said, almost like they're trying to push the climate thing now, it hasn't got the same kind of traction. As they cut everybody off with the COVID scandemic, everybody was on the back foot. They dumped it on people. In the large, most people sucked it in and went along with it, at least initially. I think the people are wary now of, for example, a climate scam, but they would also be worry of being locked down again. I think they would find it very difficult to enforce national lockdowns again the way they did from March 2020 forward. I think they would find that difficult again. So therefore, they're not sort of stopping us from associating with each other. But the reach that we have online, you saw it even on Twitter, they were blocking links through to Substack, for example. You weren't allowed to go onto certain websites from there. The hate speech laws that are coming in Ireland at the minute to literally put you in prison potentially for speaking something that might offend somebody from what they deem to be a protected class of people. It's like, well, we can't stop them meeting together now, but if they do meet, we could maybe imprison them, arrest them for it, or if they say anything online and have any kind of reach, then we could maybe confiscate all their devices and throw them into prison. It's almost like they're coming at it from a different angle now.
Yeah, there's a bit of panic going on in there, isn't there, really? Because they can't arrest everybody, but what they want to do is frighten us into not saying it and not, you know, and keeping quiet. But it's an empty threat. It's an empty threat because they haven't got the potential to control us if we don't want to be controlled. And you're right to say that that's why the COVID lockdowns worked in 2020, was because people genuinely thought that there was a dangerous pandemic and that they were doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. They relied on people's willing cooperation. But if people what can they do, actually? They can't really impose it.
They can't, and a little bit, I suppose, on the solutions front here as well, because that's one of the things we're touching on today. In Birmingham, in England, there were so many people ignoring the, you know, the ULEZ cameras, the traffic cameras, or, you know, to stop you from traveling from one zone to another. I think they had 50,000 fines that had to be processed, that they admitted themselves, Birmingham City Council admitted themselves. We can't possibly deal with the amount of non-payment of fines for trespassing from one zone to another. So they're not pursuing it. It's the same thing with, for example, this hate speech law. And it's not hate speech, it's freedom of speech. One guy in Ireland has suggested that everybody that's awake, for want of a better expression, should purposely flout that law. Everybody, have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of rule breakers and law breakers and transgressors at the same time. The system couldn't possibly cope for it. And if they came after you, but let me off the hook, well, then I would have a grievance to say, well, you're discriminating against me. Why does Rick Munn get a hold in front of the court? But Paul Kudnack is allowed to say whatever he wants. It's just a sham. That's what we do. We need to break their own system because they don't have the numbers and they don't have the infrastructure to police it. And that's the key, Paul. We need to overload them if we need to. If needs be, we need to overload them.
Yeah, it's the I Spartacus principle, isn't it? You know, everybody just needs to stand up together. And at that moment, it becomes apparent that there are many, many, many more of us than of them, and that their power, although they do have real physical power and money, but the power to control us is an illusion. It depends on us accepting their power and bowing down to it and being scared. Fear is their main weapon, isn't it? It's fear. It is. And these hate, the rest of it is part of that.
Fear is the mind killer. I don't know if you've ever seen the old David Lynch movie, June, but that's a very good line from that about fear. Fear paralyzes. You know, some people call it false evidence appearing real, but it is something that will hold you in your place. Or it can work the other way in fight or flight. You know, you can either freeze on the spot like a rabbit in the headlights, or you can get an adrenaline dump and say, you know what, the hell with it. If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down fighting, and I'm going to take as many of them with me as possible. Metaphorically speaking, of course, I'm not advocating violence here, but you get where I'm coming from. So I think it's important to have conversations like this that we're doing at the minute. We're highlighting what's going on in the world, but we're also emphasizing the importance of real world connections and the fact that it's not a lost cause. It's not over until the fat lady sings, and there is a big illusion at this moment in time. And in fact, a piece that you've just written, if I can get your input on that one, it's called Adieu to the Illusion of Democracy, talking about illusions here. Just very briefly, what's that paper all about? Because we've only got about 4 minutes left. So that piece that you've just written, Adieu to the Illusion of Democracy, is the bubble bursting out there at the minute? Are people coming to the realization that people are predominantly selected, not elected? Or what do you think about that?
Yeah, the article is specifically about France. So you know, the conclusions do apply more widely. There's been a lot of protests in France, including on May the 1st, and which aren't stopping, which aren't slowing down. Everywhere Macron and his cronies turn up, there are protests, and it's got to the point where the French state is banning protests anywhere near me. Macron paraded down the Champs-Élysées for the May the 8th is the victory of against fascism, ironically enough. And he was parading down an empty Champs-Élysées because they'd had to ban all gatherings anywhere near him because people turn up with saucepans and bangs pots and pans, which is...
And eggs. He seems to be an egg magnet, and he's a lot of people seem to want to slap him in the face. I've seen a good compilation of videos recently on Twitter where Macron's either got an egg right on the head. Some of these people are really good shots, by the way. They're ex-snipers, maybe, but they can hit a man's head with an egg from a good 50 feet away, or jump over the security and land a good slap, open-handed slap on Macron's little rat-like face. But yeah, if anybody hasn't read it, I just want to direct people your way again here. Please take the time to check out Paul's website. It's Winteroak, Winteroak, winteroak.org. .uk, and also follow him on Twitter at Winter Oak Press. I believe writers, there's a clump of you guys that I read their output. Greg Mabry's another one. Joe Allen is another one. A lot of good writers out there that I think people need to spend more time just switching off from the digital world, albeit to log on to read physical words that people have written just to get good perspectives on what's happening. So for that, Paul, I just want to appreciate you for all the work that you're doing. I know you're based out there in France, and hopefully we'll get talking again sooner rather than later, and maybe actually have a France-focused episode. There was a lady called Urmi Ray I used to have on the program here, a lovely lady, a professor of mathematics, Oxford University, but she lives in France. I've lost contact with her. I can't get her anyway. She was in the old French freedom movement, but it's been a while since I've done a French special, so maybe next time you come on, you can give it to us straight from the horse's mouth, from the grassroots and the trenches in France. So, Mr. Paul Kudnick, I just want to say thank you very much, and I bid you, au revoir. I can't say have a nice day in France. That's the limit of my French, but you get the gist, don't you?
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Right. You're welcome. So please check out Paul's writings. I'm Rick Munn. This is TNT Radio. I'll be back again tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. with the lovely Natalie Cheel and the lovely Darren Denslow. James Freeman is incoming on the Free Report. Stay tuned for more magic here only on TNT Radio.